surgery, and then I managed to rupture my Achilles tendon, chasing some second graders. Now, finally, Sharon got knocked down by two little kids this last winter, not at camp, and required back surgery here in January. Now, luckily, the doctor has released her to be able to work at camp this summer, requesting that she not lift too much, which can be easier said than done when you're at camp. Now, last summer, we had 440 youth campers, besides many more adult camps and groups that rent out our facility were not using it. Now, we have camps for kids going into first grade, all the way going up to going into college. And we had a new camp this year. It was called Kickstart Camp. And that was just this last Friday and Saturday for kids going from 5th to 8th grade. And the biggest feature about it, it was free. What we were trying to do was encourage kids that had never been to camp before to come try us out for one day. And that did work. We had 15 campers there that had never been to NABOA before. And by the time that 24-hour period was over, they were already asking their parents if they could come back for another session during the summer. Now, we have some other exciting news that has developed since I was here last, but that involves asking for money. Now, I was at Onawa a few weeks ago, and Ned Reynolds, one of their elders, told me now that if I ever needed to ask for money, that I needed to play the piano first. Now, why there is any correlation between the two, I don't know. But Jeff Hicks is one of the deans of our camps, Jam Camp, and one night he has a staff karaoke night. Now, I've been working on my song for this year, and I thought I might share that with you this morning. Now, some of you that are as old as I am, you might recognize the tune of this song. It's from back in the 60s. Naturally, I have changed the words a little bit to go along with camp. But this is my rendition of God's House of the Risen Sun. Is this thing on and ready to go? Yeah, okay, here we go. Thank you. So, hopefully it's okay if I ask for some money now. Last year, the camp was given $100,000 toward a new building project. Now, a committee was formed to assess the future needs of the camp. They looked at the possibilities of a new kitchen dining hall building, or maybe a manager missionary cabin that could be used year-round, or a new underground dorm for the campers. Now, after much consideration, it was decided that a new underground dorm would help attract more campers in the near future. Now, as many of you know, right now our dorms are not air-conditioned, and we have talked with a number of contractors, and they said it would not be economically feasible to get the dorms where AC units would really help much. Now, many of you, including myself, were not raised with air conditioning, and we really don't understand what the big deal is, but our nurses at the camp tell us that these kids that come to the camp for a week that are not used to these warmer conditions, that by the end of the week that it's taken its toll on them. This building would be built back into the hill, just like our chapel tornado shelter is, and naturally it'd also make it less susceptible to windstorms that come up during the night. Chris Bennett, who's a member of the Whiting Christian Church, works as an architect firm here in Sioux City, and they've been working on a future design for this building and its requirements. Now, the boys and girls dorm would be side by side. There's going to be a 4-foot runner down the middle where we have all of our plumbing located at. Now, originally, the only space that we could have built this would have been east of the chapel, which is behind the girls dorm. Many people had commented on how it'd be nice if we could be more in view with the lake, which would be behind the boys' dorm. Now, some of you might recall that when the Larsons sold us 13 acres back in 2009, they kept a strip of land adjacent to the lake for future development. I made a trip to Marshalltown, and I met with Mike and Jean Larson. I showed them our plans, and surprisingly enough, they decided to sell us one 75-foot by 175-foot deep lot for $25,000, and they gave us another 75-foot lot along the lake. The camp board agreed that this would be a good deal, and that is the locations of the plans of this new structure. It also leaves ample space for a future manager cabin right along the lake. Now, the projected cost of the two dorms together is $259,000. Our original donation came with a matching fund provision. So far, we've received an additional $92,000, which brings us up to $192,000 total. So we can kind of see the light at the end of the tunnel with an additional $67,000 needed to reach our goal, providing we don't get any surprises during the construction phase. We would also like to begin this project possibly as early as the first part of August. That's when our main camps get over for the kids this summer. And this is where the begging for money comes into play. If you would like to contribute to the underground dorm project, just write the word match in the memo line of your check, and we will apply it to the building. As many of you know, our policy at camp is not to go into debt for capital improvements. That is why our fees for our campers is still only $100 or less for a full week of camp. But thank you, because it's only because of churches and members that we can accomplish things like this at Camp Naboa. I've already loaded up the toilet paper and the grape jelly that you guys have provided, but because of churches being able to do that, is another reason why we're able to keep our costs down as low as it is. If there is anything else that you are interested in donating, you may have seen the wish list that my wife Sharon puts out. If there's anything else you're interested in contributing, let me know, and we'll get that taken care of. There is a women's retreat that is coming up. It's starting this Thursday. If you haven't seen the information on that, it's for any gals that would like to come. It starts Thursday night. It's going to run through Sunday. The cost is $60. Nikki Huff is the dean of that camp. So if you have any questions about that, you can see me after the service too. Our theme for 2015 is relentless. It is based off of Hebrews 10:39. But we are not of those who shrink back and are destroyed, but of those who believe and are saved. When I think about being relentless, I think about being an athlete, someone who's persistent in reaching their goal. As an athlete, some of you might remember your coaches trying to motivate you, to give it your all, to try harder, to be the best you can be. That might be an army phrase, but it applies to athletes also. No pain, no gain. It isn't the size of the man in the fight, but the size of the fight in the man. You have to want it more than the next guy. The price of victory is high, but so are the rewards. And of course, winners never quit, and quitters never win. Think for a moment what Solomon was saying when he wrote Ecclesiastes 9:11. The race is not to the swift, or the battle to the strong. Solomon was saying something right out of a coach's manual. He was saying it isn't always the strongest guy or the fastest guy that wins in life. In 2013, the Logan football team went and had a record of 5-4. They didn't even make the playoffs. This last fall was pretty much the same personnel. We had a couple guys over 200 pounds on the line. Our middle linebacker was only 5'5" tall, and he weighed less than 150 pounds. We had no track stars, no tall basketball players at split end, but yet we finished the regular season undefeated at 9-0. We won the first four games of the playoffs, making it to the state championship. With only a minute left on the clock, down by 3 points, we faced a 4th-and-2 from the 8-yard line. We had to make a choice. Go for the tie or go for the win. They decided to go for the win. And our little 5'5" running back found his way into the end zone for the winning touchdown, finishing the perfect season at 14-0. Now, during the playoffs, about every team we played was bigger than us. They were faster than us. They were taller than us. On paper, we probably should not have won, but we did. Solomon made an observation that many times to be a winner means you just won't give up. You just won't give in. And you won't quit no matter how hard the race of life gets. And I'm sure Solomon had heard the story about his father David, who took a stand against Goliath. Seeing that monster on the hillside, heavily armed, with great protection, it would have been easy for the young man David to say, "There is no way I could defeat him." But he took the stance that if God is for me, who can be against me? Now, granted, the whole world can be against you, but with God on your side, and that's a whole other message we don't have time for this morning. At camp this summer, our message is, don't quit, don't stop, don't give up, and don't give in to the world, and you will be a winner. In Genesis 6:14, God instructs Noah to make yourself an ark out of gopher wood. Now, that's just a very simple statement, but a monumental task. You know, it's like my dad telling me when I graduated from high school, go find a job that you like, and you'll be fine the rest of your life. Sometimes we have a task like that before us, and we do not know where to begin. So learn a lesson from Noah. He did exactly what God told him to do. God gave him the dimensions, what materials to use, and how to build it. Now, what if Noah would have started thinking for himself and figured it would be easier to use different materials or to make it maybe only half the size that God instructed? It probably wouldn't have turned out so well in the end. And can you imagine the ridicule that he encountered from people coming to view this monstrosity? And Noah himself didn't fully understand what he was building or why he was building it. The only thing he did know was he understood the one who asked him to build it. He never gave up. And now the way I understand it, in chapter 6, Noah was given 120 years to complete the task. Now, I have taken on some remodeling projects that my wife may have thought was going to take 120 years to finish. I cannot imagine the first day that Noah walked out of his house and he just, how in the world am I going to complete this? The story of Noah isn't about his ability to build, but his ability to keep on building. I'm sure he had days where he felt like giving up. I'm sure there are days that more things went wrong than they went right. And in the very end, I'm sure he realized it was better to be shut in with God than to be shut out with the rest of the world. He desired God in life more than friends, popularity, or acceptance by the world. And I'm sure that people tried to reason with him to talk him out of this monumental task. And I'm sure the devil used any means possible to discourage him. But winners never quit, and quitters never win. For our next example, have you considered God's man Job? Immediately after losing everything, he states in Job 1:21, I came into this world with nothing, and with nothing I will leave. The Lord gave, and the Lord takes away. Bless the name of the Lord. Here is the story of another winner. He had just lost everything. His prosperity, his livestock, his 10 kids. Basically, every worldly thing he had. In all honesty, how would you react to that situation? I mean, there's times in life that we might have a fender bender, have to take a pay cut at work, and we're here shaking our fist at God going, hey, why are you punishing us? And I hope everyone here realizes that God is not making those things happen to us, but he does allow it. Because we live in a sinful world, and stuff happens. And on top of it all off, three of his best friends came to him, accusing him of doing things wrong that caused all this heartache. But instead of getting bitter, Job got better. He realized even though he was reduced to nothing, that starting over with God was better than starting over without him. He realized his blessing wasn't the things God gave him, but God was his blessing. Job praised God in the hard times so he could praise God in the good times. Job ended up getting a double portion of everything because he didn't give up. And winners never quit, and quitters never win. Our next winner is Nehemiah. He declares in chapter 2, verse 20, the God of heaven will give us success. Therefore, we, his servants, will start rebuilding. For those of you that don't remember, Nehemiah and the majority of the Israelites have been taken captive by the Persian Empire, today which we know as Iran and Iraq. Nehemiah is basically a slave, a cupbearer to the king. He gets to take a drink of everything that comes to the king to make sure it isn't poison. Sounds like a great job. Anyway, Nehemiah has the nerve to ask the king if he could return to Jerusalem to rebuild the walls of the city. And for whatever reason, the king says, yes. And if that wasn't enough, Nehemiah asked for letters from the king for safe passage so they could harvest the trees for the rebuilding process. The king's advisors could not understand why the king was allowing this to happen to the city that they had just previously overrun. Once Nehemiah saw the devastation of the city, he knew there was no way he could repair it all. He designated part of the remnant that was there to be in charge of the little segment that was in front of the wall of their house. And then there was the threat of outsiders wanting to overrun Jerusalem before the walls were rebuilt. So they had to work with a shovel in one hand and a sword in the other. And no matter how hard the opposition got, though, Nehemiah would not take his eyes off the goal. The three biggest steps toward defeat are distraction, discouragement, and depression. Nehemiah would not let the obstacles get in the way of the opportunity. He trusted God to build it, not himself. He didn't put his trust in his ability as a carpenter or bricklayer, but his ability to let God work through him. Nehemiah completed the work not because he was a certified wall builder, but because he was a winner. And our final person for you to consider today is Jesus. Jesus had a task set before him by his Father. And when it got close to the end, even Jesus wondered if there was some other way to get around it. He could have called 10,000 angels to rescue him, but he could see past the pain, past the cross, even past the grave, into the eternity of heaven and the glory that awaited him. So he endured the mocking, his beard being ripped from his face, the beating from the guards, the scourging to a very inch of his life. And then he climbed Calvary's hill, where the guards didn't have to wrestle him down to the cross. I envisioned him willfully laying down and stretching his arms out, awaiting the rusty spikes to be pounded through his hands and his feet. We will never fully understand how much it cost to see his blood upon the cross. He did it out of grace. He did it out of love. He said, no greater love has any man than this, that he would lay down his life for his friends. Definitely, Jesus was a winner, and he never quit. He never quit loving us. He never will. Noah was a winner because his task wasn't bigger than his faith in God. Job was a winner because having God was more important than having anything else in life. Nehemiah was a winner because the obstacles weren't as big as the opportunity. And Jesus was the biggest winner of all because beyond the cross was a crown, beyond the tomb was a throne, and beyond life on this earth is an eternity in heaven. You know, our son BJ is a missions minister at First Christian Church in Decatur, Illinois. He has three little girls. Hannah is 3 years old, and then he has twin girls that are 1.5 years old, Lydia and Mia. Now, besides their overseas missions, he is also in charge of an elementary school the church has adopted. Now, we talk about no child left behind. Well, in this case, there is a whole school that got left behind in the inner city. BJ spends numerous days every week at the school helping out. And once a week, they bring the kids to the church and tutor them and help them with their physical needs. His church is a good example of being relentless toward the less fortunate in Decatur. It is a blue-collar town with numerous minorities and a definite inner-city section. Run-down and burned-out houses litter the blocks of that area. BJ was telling me how the church has gone as far as to buy up some of the lots in the middle of the inner city. They have plans of cleaning it up and putting in a playground. And they are also in the process of buying a rundown house to renovate it and make it livable. BJ continued to tell me that after it is finished, the church would like him and the girls to move into the house in the inner city to be a helping hand to the community. An example of Christ is like. Now, I'm sure there was an awkward silence while I was wrapping my thoughts around the ramifications of what he just said. He's planning on moving his wife and those three precious little girls into an area where gunshots are heard on a regular basis, drug deals are done openly in the streets, and bad things happen to little girls. Now, I didn't say any of those things, but I admit I thought it. I think any grandparent would. He assured me the house would have a steel deadbolted door between the downstairs and where their sleeping quarters would be upstairs, so when somebody does break in, they won't have easy access to them. Is there any question that that church, or even our son, has a passion for the less fortunate? They are being relentless in their efforts to share the gospel with them. And sometimes the only way we can share the good news is to go to the people in their environment. Jesus was royalty. And how did he come to this earth? He came as the poorest of the poor. He will meet us right where we are. Now, my question to you today is, would you be willing to do that if you felt that it would reach others for Christ? Would you move your family out of your nice, comfortable house into a renovated rat trap? Constantly looking over your shoulder to see what was happening to your family? I really don't know if I could do it. I thought I was doing plenty by giving up my summers to spend at Camp Naboa. You know, on one hand, we are very proud of what BJ and Mary are doing, but on the other hand, we are just praying for them daily. So, in what area of your life are you relentless? Maybe your driving force is involved with your work. Maybe it has to do with making sure that your kids are better off than you were at that age. Maybe you have a hobby or interest that drives all your spare time or extra resources. But are you relentless for anything that involves God? If you aren't, don't you think you should be? Maybe you're here for the first time today and this whole church thing is new to you. We're just a bunch of people. We are all sinners. We realize that there's a God in heaven desiring for us to be followers of Him. And that is what we are trying to get across to our young people who attend Camp Naboa. There is a God, and He is so willing to take you into His family. But when you do make that commitment, there's changes that are going to happen to your life. You know, this morning, as the band comes forward, we're going to be saying a prayer about Camp Naboa, but also about you and your life. Where are you being relentless? What's the driving force in your life? Let us pray. Lord, we come to you today. Thank you for being the God of heaven. Thank you for allowing places like Camp Naboa to exist where our young